We didn't get to hear the stories. There's a lot of things about the culture we missed out on because we're gone for years at a time.
The Elders and Youth Conference gets underway in Fairbanks. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Kalish Energy's chief executive says he's confident in the viability of their oil discovery.
I am going to make it real for you, and I think just keep the faith. We've done this before. We know how to do this.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
A Fairbanks police officer was shot multiple times early yesterday. The officer is identified as Sergeant Alan Brandt, an 11-year veteran of the Fairbanks Police Department. Brandt responded to a report of shots fired near the 300 block of 7th Avenue shortly after midnight. Once he was there, he sustained serious injuries from 5 gunshot wounds. The suspect then fled in Brandt's patrol vehicle, abandoning it a few blocks away. Brandt was transported to an Anchorage hospital for treatment, where he is reported to be in stable condition. The suspect remains at large. A 300-acre wildfire near Sutton came dangerously close to the Glen Highway this morning. The highway was temporarily closed at mile 54 while firefighting crews used a bulldozer to construct a fire line to prevent the flames from reaching the road. The highway was reopened around 11 a.m., but motorists are asked to expect delays due to smoke and firefighting crews along the road between mile 54 and 58. Meanwhile, windy conditions are thwarting fire crews' efforts to contain the Moose Creek blaze. Fire Information Officer Tim Mowry says most of the firefighting efforts are focused on the western perimeter, which is the most active.
Been a real challenge with, cold conditions. You get hoses freezing up, pumps freezing up, and it's nasty conditions, wind, 20, 30 mile an hour winds that are, helping to drive this fire and just making it miserable for our guys out there fighting it.
About 50 additional firefighters were being brought in today to support the effort. The State Division of Forestry has laid off most fire crews at the usual end of the summer fire season, so personnel from the Alaska Air National Guard and from the BLM Alaska Fire Service have been called in to help local crews. The Moose Creek fire was reported early Saturday morning. Strong winds and cold temperatures in the Mat-Su during the past 3 days have hampered firefighting efforts. The high winds have caused spot fires produced by flying embers, and winds have knocked out power in some areas, sparking at least one new fire today. Norm McDonald is a state fire division manager.
We've had several other fires this morning, last night, and have a new 5-acre fire up by King River just past Sutton. We're working on right now. We've got 2 helicopters and a couple engines on that fire. It's caused by a down power line.
This most recent fire is about 10 miles from the Moose Creek blaze. Winds are expected to subside by tomorrow, which should give crews a better chance to contain the fires. More than 1,000 Alaska Natives, young and old, from across the state met today in Fairbanks at the 33rd Annual Elders and Youth Conference. The event, hosted by the First Alaskans Institute, is usually an opportunity for 13 to 18-year-olds to learn about leadership, civic engagement, and consensus building alongside their elders. This year's conference theme is Ancestral Imperative: Adapt, Unite, Achieve, and it runs through Wednesday morning. Attendees are encouraged to talk seriously about issues facing their communities, and there are many afternoon workshops focused on language, culture, subsistence, and policy. The day began with a welcome and blessing from the Reverend Luke Titus and the Reverend Anna Frank. Both are Tanana Athabascan from Interior Alaska. Liz Medicine Crow, the Institute's president and CEO, addressed the crowd, along with former state lawmaker Willie Hensley, who serves as the organization's board chair. Hensley talked about how the Elders and Youth Conference first started as an opportunity for Alaska Native youth who spent most of the year at boarding school, away from their home communities.
And so we didn't have the opportunity to interface with our parents, our aunts and uncles, our communities. We were away from our language. We didn't get to hear the stories. There's a lot of things about the culture we missed out on because we were gone for years at a time.
The conference took on a more solemn tone briefly when Medicine Crow advised the gathering about the ongoing manhunt in Fairbanks for the person who shot the Fairbanks police officer. Police say they're looking for an Alaska Native man in his 20s. Medicine Crow said the organization has talked with Fairbanks police.
They are aware of all of our visitors coming in, and they want to make sure you have a good experience as well. But it just requires a little bit more awareness of what's happening around you when you go out and about. And remind our brothers to keep their heads up and to be safe.
This year's youth keynote address was given by Joan Inga Baranowski, who is Sukpiak from Old Harbor, a city in the Kodiak Island borough. As part of a science project she worked on earlier this year, the sixth grader tested homes in her community for radon, a known carcinogen. Based on her initial work, potential problems were identified in several homes. In her speech, Baranowski advocated for youth to be aware of the environment and to be good stewards. In a shallow bay off Alaska's North Slope, the small company Kalis Energy may have made the biggest oil discovery in the world since 2010. If developed, the field could have a major impact on Alaska's economy and the global oil market. But that's a big if. There are plenty of obstacles in the way. As Elizabeth Harbaugh reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, this isn't beginner's luck for Kalis' top boss. It's his third major oil find.
Jim Musselman is an elephant hunter. Elephant fields, that is.
I've always said if I'm going to make any money, I've got to find something big in order to make it work. So we've always been looking for kind of elephant-type stuff. I've got elephants all over my office in Dallas.
There are no elephants in Kalis' pristine offices in Midtown Anchorage. But reclining at the head of a conference table, the Kalis CEO is big. He's a true Texan who comes off less like an oil magnate and more like your friendly uncle. Musselman's also a gambler. He built a horse racing track in Texas once, but he says the stakes there aren't high enough. He'd rather put his money on oil, and his gamble in Alaska may have paid off big time.
It was pretty extraordinary. I was actually, we had a kind of a war room down on the first floor here, and I remember very well, I get kind of goosebumps when we start seeing those logs come in.
That's because Musselman thinks he's found 2 billion barrels of oil in state waters east of Barrow. If it's confirmed, it'll be the state's biggest find since the late 1960s. Musselman embodies a new kind of character on Alaska's oil scene. For decades, big companies dominated the North Slope. Now, smaller companies like Kalis are stealing the headlines with potentially game-changing discoveries. I asked Musselman what makes him different from the big majors.
That's a good question. How do I answer this tactfully? We're probably better risk takers than the bigger companies are.
And Musselman's strong stomach for risk has paid dividends in the past. Smith Bay could be his third world-class find. The first two were in Africa. As CEO of Kosmos Energy, Musselman discovered the Jubilee oil field off Ghana's coast. A story with so many cliffhangers, Musselman ended up the star of a documentary produced by Brad Pitt called Big Men. One scene shows Musselman toasting the find with his partners. Musselman was eventually forced to step down at Kosmos after tensions flared between the company and Ghana's government. But the Jubilee oil field started producing in 2010. So the big question now is whether Musselman can deliver on the North Slope. For the moment, Alaska officials and energy experts are cautiously optimistic, emphasis on cautiously. Cody Rice is an analyst at Wood Mackenzie in New York. He says, first, he needs to see more well tests from Kalis to know if the find is real. Plus, he says,
this project, while it's massive in terms of resource base, is not going to single-handedly make Alaska great again.
The find could add billions of barrels of oil to the Trans-Alaska pipeline system, but that won't happen soon enough to help solve the state's current fiscal crisis. Because even if the oil is there, Rice says getting it to market is going to be tough.
It's a global-scale discovery, and anytime you have something of that scale, it's inherently complex.
In a report, Wood Mackenzie says the field's geology makes the oil hard to access, and Kalis might have to build a long offshore pipeline, which would draw a lot of scrutiny from regulators and environmental groups. Here's Lois Epstein with the Wilderness Society in Anchorage.
Absolutely. We're very concerned about the potential for a massive development by Kalis.
Epstein's biggest concern is location. Kalis's find is just north of Teshikbuk Lake, a key habitat for migratory birds. Musselman says Kalis will keep operations far away from Teshikbuk Lake. But he admits other things need to fall into place for the $10 billion project to pencil out. That includes changes to Alaska's tax policy and much higher oil prices. Still, like any good gambler, Musselman radiates confidence. This is his message to Alaskans.
I am going to make it real for you, and I think just keep the faith. We've done this before. We know how to do this.
Kalis is expecting final confirmation on the find in 2018. That will be the first proof of whether Musselman's big Alaska bet will truly pay off. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Juneau gets some of the state's first snowfall.
The storms that the Pacific Northwest has been seeing over the last several days is basically those storm systems that have been deflected farther south.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by
the Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The National Weather Service reported Sunday that Juneau is one of the first communities in the state to see measurable snowfall this year. KTOO's Quinton Chandler reports the snow follows unusually dry October weather.
National Weather Service meteorologist Edward Liske says this season is the first time Juneau has seen measurable snowfall before Fairbanks since about 1940.
Fairbanks has not seen any snow yet so far this season. Neither has Anchorage. Nome has had zero. Kotzebue has had zero. The only place that really has had measurable snow so far this season has been Burrough with a tenth of an inch so far.
But Juneau has seen snow earlier in the past. In 1974 and again in 2000, Juneau saw its earliest snowfalls on October 2nd. Liske says this year's snow followed unusually dry October weather. According to him, Juneau saw 2 inches of snow downtown Sunday, 5 inches near the airport, and 8 to 9 inches at the National Weather Service forecast office in the Mendenhall Valley. The precipitation started as a sudden mix of rain and snow that hit Juneau on Saturday, interrupting what Liske calls unusually warm conditions.
As we started getting heavier and heavier rain, or heavier and heavier precip, it just made the surface temperature is colder and colder to the point that the rain changed over to snow during a Saturday evening.
But Liske says the snowy weather was short-lived. It was already reverting to rain Sunday evening, and he predicts Juneau will continue to see warmer and rainier weather through the rest of the week, and the snow will most likely melt. Before the early snowfall, Liske says an area of high pressure called a ridge surrounded much of interior Alaska and the Gulf of Alaska giving Juneau its uncharacteristically dry October weather.
That ridge has actually been deflecting a lot of our storm systems that we usually see farther south. The storms that the Pacific Northwest has been seeing over the last several days, it's basically those storm systems that have been deflected farther south.
He says that ridge has mostly collapsed. Liske also says this entire year has been much warmer than usual for Juneau. That, plus this month's earlier dry weather and this most recent early season snowstorm, has led him to conclude this year has been odd, to say the least. In Juneau, I'm Quentin Chandler.
The Anchorage Police Department is joining 100 other police departments around the country to provide more data and information to their communities. APD announced on Friday it's participating in the White House Police Data Initiative. Lieutenant Jack Carson says the aim is to increase transparency within the Anchorage Police Department.
We're going to put out the data sets that are going to kind of hopefully give further light on what we do as a police department day to day. And creating that transparency is going to help us work better with our community is what we're hoping for.
Over the next year, APD will provide 3 open data sets to the public. But Carson says exactly which data sets has not yet been determined.
We've been going to the community safety meetings and community councils and stuff, kind of getting a feel for what the community's starving for, what information they're wanting from the Anchorage Police Department. And we're going to base on the data sets that we released a lot on the information we received from those local councils.
The department already releases calls for service, arrest rates, and citizen complaints. Carson expects the distribution to be spread out over the next year. Last week, the Dillingham City Council voted to keep its protest of a liquor license transfer in place. The unanimous vote was far from a guaranteed outcome going into the meeting, but the public turned out to testify again about some concerns about the proposed new liquor store on Lake Road. As KDLG's Dave Benninger reports, the city will defend its protest to the State Alcohol Control Board later this month.
Dozens turned out to speak or just see how the council would vote at Thursday's meeting. At issue is whether or not Olson's Liquor Store will move from an underused location inside the Willow Tree Bar to a new country store on Raspberry Circle up Lake Road. It's a state license, but the city has the right to protest, Mayor Alice Ruby told the council.
And in this case, the city filed a letter of protest, and our letter was based on a lack of public notice. That's the justification we put in the letter.
That happened in August. Whether or not the owner, Mike Keenan, met the statutory requirements for public noticing has been a moot point for many. They say he could have done a much better job letting his neighbors know his plans, a sentiment Ruby also reflected.
I do feel like Mr. Keenan met the minimum standards, but in our community, the minimum just wasn't adequate. I feel like there could have been more done in advance just as a good corporate citizen.
Keenan says he has met the state's requirements and is working in good faith to open a business customers want. He attended the council meeting by phone. The general manager of the downtown liquor store, Kim Parker, made the case in person.
I'm here to ask you to remove the protest to the relocation of the Olson's Liquor Store. There are no zoning laws in Dillingham to separate commercial business from residential. At the Dillingham Liquor Store, there have been 0 violations since Mike Keenan had purchased the business. I repeat, 0. We have a good working relationship with the local law enforcement and the state troopers. We operate the store in a socially responsible manner with a high regard for the law.
Parker carried with her a petition with 187 signatures in support of the new liquor store, but none others stood to speak along those lines Thursday. Instead, the council heard from 17 others who were adamantly opposed.
The increase in teenagers getting a hold of booze out there is going to be way higher. They will go to that store, try to set up ways to get booze as opposed to downtown.
I live on Mossberry, and just as a mother and I guess a person from the neighborhood, I just don't think it's a good idea.
I'm certain if there's a liquor store in that neighborhood that there's going to be increases of motor vehicle crashes and all the other associated problems with drunk driving and DUIs.
Although I do appreciate the liquor store's
not having any violations, and I really do appreciate their work with law enforcement. This just isn't a good fit for the neighborhood.
That was John Montooth, Michelle Smith, Ron Bowers, and Diane Folsom. Two state troopers spoke up in opposition to the new store, saying increased alcohol sales and use would likely lead to more problems they will have trouble responding to. Rex Spofford, who also works in law enforcement, spoke as a private citizen and brought up the concern of selling alcohol so near to the Manicotic Trail.
This is the interstate in the winter for our neighbors to the west who have chosen and continue to choose to remain as local option communities, decisions that have been made by their elders and leaders who have seen the devastating impact alcohol has had on their families. The leadership in these communities are very concerned about having a liquor store in the proposed location, given the ease of accessibility and likely the increased difficulty in detecting importation activity.
Olson's Liquor Store says it knows how to sell alcohol responsibly and help curb trafficking to the Dry Villages, and touts its zero violations and cooperation with law enforcement. But the message given to the council Thursday night was overwhelmingly in opposition and borderline prohibitionist. Juliana Montooth also lives near Raspberry Circle.
As a physician for 13 years in Dillingham, I have already seen too much alcohol-related sadness and tragedy, and do not want it to increase either in my neighborhood in Dillingham or the villages. Mr. Keenan, the owner fighting for this location, will not even be in Dillingham to suffer the bad consequences of the wealth he is gaining.
In filing its initial protest in August, the council said it was hoping in part to solicit some public opinion, which it certainly received. The vote to keep the protest in place Thursday was unanimous. The owner can appeal to the ABC board, arguing he has met the state's legal requirements and that Dillingham's arguments are unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious. The city will have to defend its protest to the board at its October 26th meeting in Nome. Public comments on the matter are due into the board by Sunday, October 16th. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, but together we can change that one life at a time. The Statewide Suicide Prevention Council has the resources and training to prevent suicide and support healing for individuals in need. Be the one to ask if someone is thinking about suicide and connect them to help. Visit StopSuicideAlaska.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Homer police arrested a man in connection with a three-year-old murder case on Sunday. 55-year-old Lee John Henry was charged with murdering Mark Matthews on July 28, 2013, near the Poop Deck Trail in Homer. Henry was arraigned this morning in the Homer Courthouse for first-degree murder. Judge Margaret Murphy appointed a public defender for him but did not set bail. According to a release, Homer police arrested Henry on October 16th on Pioneer Avenue. He was reportedly taken into custody without incident. If convicted, Henry will face 30 to 99 years in prison and up to a $500,000 fine. The Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly passed a resolution on October 11th revising its policy on the invocation that begins each meeting. The new policy places restrictions on who is allowed to give the invocation. KBBI reporter Shayla Farzan has this story.
Under the newly approved resolution, the borough clerk will maintain a list of qualifying religious organizations. Only people or associations on this list will be allowed to give the invocation that begins each Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly meeting. The assembly was divided over the proposed resolution, which was approved in a 6-3 vote. Assemblymember Stan Wells supported the resolution. An invocation is a Christian prayer by definition, Wells argued.
Invocation directly points toward prayer, and prayer points to our Lord God, who is our Creator. And there is only one.
But South Peninsula Representative Willie Dunn said it's not the borough's place to decide which religious organizations can provide the invocation.
Our responsibility here is to carry out the business of the borough and not debate which religion is appropriate, which one isn't.
The controversy over the borough assembly invocation began this summer when it was given by Iris Fontana, a member of the Satanic Temple. Fontana attended the October 11th borough assembly meeting. She said the assembly should not place restrictions on who is allowed to give the invocation.
A strict policy that focuses on who's allowed to give an invocation is a blatant attempt at discrimination.
The assembly also heard testimony from other members of the public. The overwhelming majority did not support the proposed invocation policy. Soldotna resident Carrie Henson argued the United States was built on religious freedom.
America has never been a Christian nation. We are a free nation.
Bruce Wall of Soldotna said he had planned to give an invocation at an upcoming borough assembly meeting. Under the new resolution, he will not be allowed to do so.
Because I support my ex-wife's right to living in a same-gender relationship, I'm no longer allowed to fully participate in my church. And so I'm not affiliated with a religious organization. And this resolution would prevent me from offering invocations here.
Judith Jenkinson of Kasilof chided the assembly for what she said was a restriction of free speech.
You are not being very open. I am so embarrassed to recognize you sitting there in your religious, pious position.
Under the new policy, only pre-approved religious organizations will be allowed to give the meeting invocation. According to the resolution, the borough president will determine the authenticity of religious organizations based on criteria used by the Internal Revenue Service for awarding 501c3 tax-exempt status. Joshua Decker is the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska. He says the borough's revised invocation policy may violate constitutional rights.
It seems like Tuesday's ordinance was designed to exclude religious minorities and atheists from offering invocations, and this is constitutionally suspect, because once government invites prayer into the public sphere, it must be open to everyone.
The new invocation policy will go into effect immediately. The next Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly meeting will be held on October 25th. In Homer, I'm Shayla Farzan.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Josh Edge and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Jennifer Canfield in Fairbanks, Quentin Chandler in Juneau, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, and Shayla Farzan in Homer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. More than 25,000 Alaskans are part of the Salmon Project family. Through stories, news, and a whole lot of salmon love, they're building a statewide community united by salmon. Find them on Facebook and join the conversation. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. APRN brings news about Alaska to public radio every day. APRN, we cover the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.